I'm Rob Kirkup, and this is How Haunted, the paranormal podcast where each episode we explore the horrible history and terrifying ghost stories of one of the scariest places on the planet, or in this case, an entire county of haunted locations. In episode 75, you join me for part 2 of our trilogy of episodes situated in Ireland. This time we visit a further 12 locations, in this most picturesque yet terrifying of counties. With stops along our ghost trail including a school, an asylum, a jail, and if you're in need of a pint of Guinness or something stronger to calm your nerves, you'll be pleased to hear that we're stopping at plenty of pubs along our route. Let's ask together once again, just how haunted is County Cork?
Listener discretion is advised, as each episode of How Haunted will feature gruesome tales, horrific happenings, bloody murder, and ghosts. So many ghosts. Listen on if you dare.
Cork City Jail. You join me as our ghost trail of County Cork continues at Cork City Jail, which stands as a testament to the shadows of Ireland's past, where the echoes of history intertwine with whispers of the supernatural. Opening its ominous gates in 1824, this imposing structure was born from necessity. It replaced a decrepit predecessor infamous for its overcrowding and unsanitary conditions. Originally accommodating both men and women, it later transformed into a women-only facility, bearing witness to the trials and tribulations of countless souls until its closure in August of 1923, almost a century after its inception. During its 99 years in operation, prisoners lived in conditions barely imaginable by today's standards. The jail was also the site of executions, such as Owen Ryan, who was hanged on the 26th of April 1828 for the rape of Eliza Fair. A crowd of thousands gathered, and following the hoisting of a black flag, a lever was pulled at 10 past 1 in the afternoon, but something went wrong, and his death did not come swiftly. The excitable crowd watched on for almost 15 minutes, as Owen thrashed and struggled for his life at the end of that rope. Then asphyxiation finally saw him expire. However, the cessation of its role as a prison did not mark the end of the jail's story. In a curious twist, a radio studio was set up in 1927 on the top floor of the Governor's House to broadcast Cork's local radio station, called 6CK. The station was succeeded by Radio Éireann, a national radio station that continued to broadcast from the jail until the 1950s. Then the jail was once again left empty and abandoned, left to languish in the embrace of time. Fast forward to 1993, and Cork City Jail reopened its doors. This time not as a place of confinement, but as a haunting attraction for intrepid visitors, eager to explore its chilling corridors and cells. And it wasn't long before reports emerged of spectral encounters and inexplicable phenomena. Workers restoring the prison to its former glory recounted hearing disembodied voices resonating from the depths of the building, while apparitions of a woman, dressed in clothing typical of the 18th century, materialised before startled eyes. One particularly eerie incident occurred shortly after the jail's reincarnation as a tourist destination. A member of staff heard the voice of a child call out, "Daddy." They sought out the youngster who appeared to be lost and alone, only to encounter the spectral figure of a woman clad in green who walked through a wall and was gone. Such occurrences only intensified during the annual World Ghost Convention, which found its home within the jail's sombre confines from 2001 through to 2016. Attendees swapped tales of ghostly encounters that they experienced right there within the jail's dimly lit passageways. Accounts of paranormal activity continue to intensify, with visitors recounting disembodied voices echoing down abandoned corridors, and witnessing inexplicable movements of objects and lights flicker into life without any form of human intervention. One harrowing tale shared on TripAdvisor recounted a ghostly encounter within a desolate cell, a chilling testament to the enduring presence of the jail's spectral inhabitants. The review read, "Loved my visit here. Very knowledgeable staff and gives you the feel for how it was for the inmates. I even had a ghost encounter in one of the cells, and when I went back and told the man, he informed me that yes, a lot of people encounter the exact same thing in that particular cell." Despite the chilling tales and eerie manifestations, Elizabeth Kearns, the jail's manager, maintains a pragmatic outlook acknowledging the presence of these spectral denizens with a respectful reverence. These spirits were in here before we were, she reflected. We give due respect to them and do not interfere. Similarly, they do not interfere with us. We have not experienced anything sinister. Today, Cork City Jail stands as more than a mere relic of the past. It is a living testament of the intertwined legacies of history and the supernatural. Where the echoes of bygone eras reverberate alongside whispers of spectral inhabitants who continue to haunt its hallowed halls. The Franciscan Well Brewery. In the heart of Cork lies the enigmatic Franciscan Well Brewery and Brew Pub, nestled within the ancient walls of what was once the venerable Shandon Friary. Its history steeped in tales of centuries past. Dating back to 1214, the sacred ground here was established by none other than Diarmaid MacCarthy Mór, King of South Munster, whose vision was fulfilled by his son, Finian Dermot. Finian was an Irish chieftain who embodied the fusion of Anglo-Norman and Native Irish cultures, due to being married to a Norman wife himself. And he oversaw completion of the friary, where both traditions intermingled harmoniously. Legend has it that within the brewery's courtyard lies a well. Renowned for its purported healing powers, it drew crowds seeking remedy, particularly for those with eyesight issues. In 1627, the Earl of Cork acquired the lands, passing them down to his son Roger upon his passing. Despite King Henry VIII's oppression, Catholic religious rites persisted on this site, evidenced by the construction of a chapel by the friars in the late 17th century. It's said that even King James II participated in Mass within this chapel during his stay at the Abbey, en route to the ill-fated Battle of the Boyne in 1690. Legend whispers of a hidden passage from Gran na Bethair, meaning the Brothers' Grove, to the crypt beside the brewery well, a lifeline for Catholics during penal times. Fast forward to 1804, amid the construction of the North Mall houses, remnants of the friary emerged from the earth, unveiling graves and gravestones. Notably today, the brew pub's beer garden stands upon these sacred burial grounds. During the 1940s, the Franciscan Well served as a hub for Guinness bottling, quenching the thirst of Cork's populace. The Earl of Cork's ties to the property ceased when the current owner secured the freehold in 1998, marking a new chapter in the brewery's enduring saga as the Franciscan Well Brewery, and it's now the number one craft brewery in all of Ireland. And of course, it's haunted. Not only is it haunted, but it's one of the best known haunted locations in all of County Cork. It was following the 1998 change in the site's purpose that unusual occurrences began. Shane Long, who founded the brewery that year, heard dragging footsteps, an object smashing without seemingly any reason. Doors would swing open and closed all on their own, and icy cold spots would appear, even on the hottest summer's day. Things were so out of hand that, ironically, given the site's former purpose, he called in a priest to bless the location. Despite this, the reportings continued. If anything, they intensified. It's believed that the cause of the disturbances is a phantom monk. Why he haunts the brewery isn't clear. Some believe that he was murdered here during the time of the site being a friary, whereas others think that it's more likely that he cannot rest as his grave, and potentially his skeletal remains, were disturbed during the construction work in 1804. The Maldron Hotel Shandon. While now transformed into the esteemed Maldron Hotel Shandon, the building was formerly the North Infirmary Hospital, established in 1720. Over its 267-year tenure, the hospital weathered storms of conflict both domestic and abroad, serving as a beacon of healing for countless individuals. Yet amid the bustling corridors of hope, some souls have found themselves ensnared, lingering long past the hospital's closure in 1987. Today, as a distinguished 4-star hotel, the Maldron Hotel Shandon boasts a reputation laced with whispers of the paranormal. Room 325 in particular is shrouded in mystery. It stands as a testament of the unexplained phenomena that once gripped its confines, and the paranormal occurrences in this room are so intense that management have had to seal the room off and not allow guests to stay in it. The hotel's gym, which was once the hotel mortuary, has seen mirrors break all on their own, and equipment malfunction for no reason whatsoever. This appears to be testament to unseen forces at play. In hotel bedrooms, televisions flicker to life of their own accord, while empty rooms resonate with mysterious sounds. People have complained to the hotel's reception about loud noises and screaming coming from the room next to theirs, only to find out that there's not a guest staying in there. The room is empty. The spirit of a grieving woman is seen wandering the corridors and rooms, her spectral form haunting plea for aid. Legend tells of a tragic demise given birth. Her child survived, but she did not. And her restless spirit is forever trapped within the walls of the Maldron Hotel Shandon, eternally searching for her baby. Reviews on TripAdvisor appear to back up the claims that there is something out of the ordinary happening at the hotel. Here are just three examples. I stayed there on a tour on the 1st of September 2017. I had a ghost cat in my room. Two or three other rooms had independent paranormal experiences. I am an engineer and do not believe in paranormal stuff, but this makes me question my belief for the first time. We all had our windows looking out onto the cemetery. Another reviewer said, the window overlooked the cemetery. We saw a ghost at the wardrobe, a lady the height of a wardrobe wearing a beige dress with flowers on it, and it felt as if we were being watched all night. We also had our door not open, as if it was locked from the inside, but the front light had turned green when we inserted the card, but it still wouldn't open for a good 5 minutes. The final review we look at said, I stayed in room 317. 100% there was a figure in a wheelchair beside the bed. That was December of 2020. The last 2 nights I stayed in room 529, and there were large shadows flying around the room. I checked reflections, windows, curtains, etc., and there was no explanation. The Oval Pub. The Oval in Leaside holds the esteemed title of being one of the city's oldest pubs, yet it harbours a secret that may elude its regular patrons. It's haunted. During the quiet of night, when the doors are bolted and the last drinker has finished their pint and headed out into the night, eerie apparitions have been sighted by the staff, haunting the premises with their spectral presence. Located on South Main Street, the Oval boasts a distinctive Rennie McIntosh style, a relic from its inception by the Beamish and Crawford Brewery in 1905. Through its storied history, it has welcomed a diverse array of clientele, from ordinary folk to valiant soldiers fighting for Ireland's independence. Despite the relentless attempts by the British to burn it to the ground, the pub stood defiant, a testament to its resilience. Originally constructed as apartments nearly 2 centuries ago, the building transitioned into its current form as a pub in 1918, amidst the ravages of the Spanish flu pandemic. Legend speaks of a benevolent resident ghost, whose mischievous antics are perceived by the staff as playful rather than malevolent. The pub exudes an atmosphere reminiscent of traditional Irish establishments of yore, with its cosy fireplace and snug cubbyholes enveloping the bar, evoking a sense of warmth and comfort. However, venturing upstairs reveals a different narrative, one fraught with unease and apprehension. Former staff members recount a myriad of particular occurrences, each adding to the pub's mystique. One recalls an evening when, with the door securely locked and only 3 individuals present, a phantom figure darted towards a sealed entrance, vanishing upon inspection. Another tale involves a startled member of staff who was sitting outside waiting for a colleague who was up in the office. She then heard somebody say hello 3 times, followed by an unseen presence brushing past her. This prompted a hasty retreat upstairs, refusing to come down until her colleague joined her. Among the recurring spectres, one takes the form of a soldier, clad in full military regalia, who materialises in the bar before appearing to warm himself by the fireplace. He then just disappears into the ether. It's surmised that these apparitions are not solitary, with whispers of multiple ghosts seeking to make their presence known within the hallowed confines of the Oval Bar. The Blackamoor Lane Friary. The Blackamoor Lane Friary, erected in 1771, stood tall for over 2 centuries until its ruins met their demise in October 2004. What's intriguing is the manner in which it was brought down, as it was demolished without permission. When the demolition crew were ordered to stop, with only a third of the friary still standing, decisions needed to be made as whether to order the friary to be rebuilt. But ultimately the demolition was completed. The friary church on Blackamoor Lane was eventually closed on the 6th of October 1850, and the building soon fell into disrepair. But in the decades prior to that it was very popular, and in 1838, one woman had an experience she would never forget. It was on an April evening of that year when an elderly woman, arriving late to the chapel, unwittingly found herself locked inside the church after nodding off in her pew. As the witching hour approached, the chapel was bathed in an ethereal glow, casting eerie shadows across its expanse. The woman, startled from her slumber, beheld a spectral friar materialised at the altar, beckoning for assistance in conducting mass. She was frozen in terror, and it appeared that the ghost twice more asked her to join him at the altar. But she did nothing, and he faded away into the night, leaving her trembling behind the shelter of a pew. Upon her release at dawn, the woman sought solace in the counsel of Father Theobald Matthew, known for his compassion and understanding. Moved by her tale, Father Matthew resolved to investigate the matter firsthand, waiting himself until the witching hour to confront the supernatural presence within the chapel. True to the woman's account, the ghostly friar appeared, extending the invitation to conduct mass once more. Without hesitation, Father Matthew stepped forward, joining the spectral figure in performing the sacred rites. Upon the completion of mass, the apparition dissipated into the darkness, never to be seen again. Legend holds that this encounter left an indelible mark on Father Matthew, and it inspired him to take the pledge and lead the Cork Total Abstinence Society on April 10, 1838. His fervent commitment sparked a movement, and within 7 years around 3 million Irish people vowed never to touch alcohol again. Barbarella. Our next stop sees us go to the pub. And not just any pub. The oldest licensed pub in all of Cork. The Gateway Inn was established in 1698, but it closed down in 2017, and it's now called Barbarella. The pub was built on top of ancient monastery burial grounds, and being situated near to Elizabeth Fort on Barrack Street, it was a popular haunt for soldiers during the 17th century. Surely with this kind of history, the inn must be haunted. It appears so, but despite the rich history, there's not much being written about the inn as you'd expect, with the majority of stories coming out in recent years since it became Barbarella. In the summer of 2022, the manager spoke to the local press about the spirits to be found at the pub. He was quoted as saying, "You get a weird feeling when you're here by yourself. It's not a good feeling. It's creepy. I would not want to be here on my own." He then shared a story from a previous manager who was working alone at the pub. The bar was closed and all that was left was the cleaning up. As he made his way to the main bar, he noticed an old man at the corner of the pub drinking a pint. He said that he'd come back to the man and went to leave the cleaning stuff in the corridor. When he came back, the old man had disappeared. The manager had thought that maybe he'd not locked the door and the old man had left, but as he went to check the doors, they were all locked. He always made sure to lock the doors whenever he cleaned up, so this was strange. The manager then told an equally spooky story. "There was one time that really freaked me out. We have a back room that leads to a beer garden in the pub. What really is unsettling was that in the darkness, our motion sensors picked up that someone was there. When I went to look, the room was empty," he said. "There was literally nobody in the building, which was really weird." Another staff member said that they had been working behind the bar when heavy pint glasses on the wall started shaking, as if they were bouncing off each other. St Finbar's Cathedral. Next on our ghost trail, we stand before the Gothic Revival St Finbar's Cathedral. This Church of Ireland cathedral with its three spires was completed in October 1879. But this site has been used as a place of Christian worship since the 7th century, when Finbar of Cork, who the cathedral is named for, founded a monastery here. St Finbar, who lived from around 550 AD until his death on the 25th of September 623, is the patron saint of the city and of the Diocese of Cork. A local legend relates to two golden trumpets held by the figure of a golden angel that sits atop the dome of the cathedral, their bright copper-gilded hue contrasting greatly against the limestone cathedral. It's said that if the trumpets are heard being blown, then the end of the world is nigh, and the people of Cork should be the first to enter heaven. Interestingly, and worryingly considering the nature of this superstition, in 1998, the trumpets were stolen. The angel remained untouched among the Gothic spires for 128 years. That was until the two trumpets in her hand were removed and stolen in 1998. The theft made national news as the Irish Times reported that the robber, who was never identified, climbed the 160-foot dome of the cathedral and removed the 4-inch nails which held them in place, and then made off with them. The Church of Ireland condemned the criminal act, telling the Irish Times, "It is something we just do not understand. Why would anyone do such a thing?" Thankfully, within 48 hours, the trumpets were found discarded on waste ground at the other side of Cork, and they were returned to their rightful place. The lake in Corglock Park. A protected area since 1881, the spring-fed freshwater lake is now a wildfowl preserve, particularly for swans, and it's also used for catch-and-release angling. It's a lovely spot for families to come on a sunny day and feed the ducks and the swans. But the vast majority of those don't know the legend of the lake. Many centuries ago, this area was ruled over by a king. His dominion extended far and wide, yet the jewel of his realm lay within what today is the park. Adjacent to his stronghold, a solitary well had been excavated. Its waters rumoured to possess an unparalleled freshness that drew crowds from distant lands. The king, benevolent in nature, welcomed all to partake of its bounty, endearing himself to his subjects. Alas, this kindness on his part did not last for long. He only had one child, and on his daughter's 18th birthday, the king's demeanour shifted as he declared the erection of a hut over the well, reserving its access solely for his princess, justifying his decree by claiming the water's sanctity for royal lineage alone. The king's selfish act invoked the ire of a formidable supernatural force. When the princess ventured to the well to fetch water for her guests, calamity ensued. The once placid water surged forth, with the ferocity of a tempest, engulfing the revellers and submerging the kingdom beneath its wrath. In the aftermath, when the flood waters receded, the king's stronghold had vanished, replaced by the tranquil expanse of the lake as we know it today in Lock Park. It's been claimed that on some evenings the sounds of the final birthday party can be heard emerging from the murky depths of the lake, the guests unaware of their demise all those years ago. Kalash Damon Rees School, formerly Deer Park CBS. Kalash Damon Rees is the oldest school on Cork's south side. It was founded in 1828 on Sullivan's Quay, and in September 2019 it became Kalash Damon Rees, the first English-speaking coeducational Catholic secondary school in Cork City. The name is Irish for Edmund Rice College, named for the school's founder. The school shot to fame in 2017 when some CCTV footage captured in a corridor at 3 in the morning was shared online. It went viral, amassing over 20 million views. It's a fairly chilling video showing a door violently swinging open, creating a booming sound in the silent school. Then some lockers rock back and forth before a locker door swings open and a book flies out. Then a wet floor sign appears to be thrown upwards into the air before clattering back down to earth. The school was immediately dubbed the world's most haunted school. The video meant that the school was investigated in an episode of the TV show called Spooked Island, and the school's principal was interviewed by the media prior to the episode going out. What he had to say was this: "What sparks the interest in the school and much of the Greenmount area is built on mass graves, where the English used to hang people. They'd be hanged in the area where the Lock Park Community Centre is, they'd be buried beneath the school, and people would go to the Gallows Pub for a drink. Our ghost was caught on camera in 2017, and we put it on YouTube with a question, prank or poltergeist. The clip went viral all over the world, with around 22 million views. It was featured on The Late Late Show in America, and there has been various film crews there over the years from Japan, China, the Netherlands and America, with a Japanese film crew once having a presenter leave halfway through filming because he was so afraid, and the crew returned home to find that all of the audio had mysteriously been wiped from their footage. No one has ever came forward to say that they did this, and people have tried to debunk it saying it's a green screen or a string, but nobody has ever seen a string. It's funny to read stuff about your old school," he added, referring to claims that the school is now closed down as there was a mysterious fire which claimed the lives of students. "I've never witnessed anything or been frightened, but some of my staff have seen things, and some are scared to go into certain places." This video has come under a lot of scrutiny, and a lot of people think that it's faked. "I won't give my own personal opinion on what I think about it. I'll let you make your own mind up. But there are many, many videos on YouTube analysing the video and even claiming to show how it was faked. The link to the original video is in this podcast episode description." Cork District Lunatic Asylum. Eglinton Asylum opened in 1893. It later became known as Our Lady Psychiatric Hospital in the 1950s. And the red brick St. Kevin's Hospital was built in the late 1890s. It was an overrun Gothic asylum for those deemed mentally insane. Tragically, conditions that today would be recognised as suffering from mental health issues. Some women being held at the asylum were committed simply for being single mothers. They were treated like prisoners here, despite being guilty of nothing. Conditions were so atrocious that a report deemed it the Chapter of Horrors. Many patients attempted to escape, but drowned in the adjacent River Lee. The asylum was abandoned in 2002 and has now been converted into 266 luxury apartments. In stark contrast to the living standards that the previous residents endured. During the near two-decade period when it was empty and unused, paranormal investigations were carried out, and even the most hardened of investigators struggled to stay more than a couple of hours, due to the oppressive nature of the building and the constant feeling of somebody behind you, following you silently, then retreating into the shadows every time you dared to peer over your shoulder. Footsteps were heard walking slowly through the empty wards, and piercing screams were heard. On one occasion, an inquisitive, or perhaps foolhardy man, popped his head through a broken window to see what he could see in the darkness. He saw nothing, but he heard whispered voices faintly citing names and places. The ghost hunting team Cork paranormal investigators spent time here after dark, and they heard a toilet flush in an area that no investigator was in. They later discovered that the water had been cut off completely to this building. As for those brave souls who now call those 266 apartments home, I do wonder just how soundly they sleep at night. St Finbar's Hospital. St Finbar's Hospital today is a care home for elderly people on the Douglas Road in Cork City. The hospital has its origins in the Cork Union Workhouse and Infirmary, which was designed by George Wilkinson and completed in 1841. A large three-storey block was added to the north of the site. The facility became the Cork District Hospital in 1898, and later became the Cork County Home and Hospital. In 1923, it was designated by ministerial order as responsible for the treatment of medical, surgical, and maternity cases, as well as cases of infectious or contagious diseases. Only 4 short years after the hospital opened, it was filled way beyond its capacity with over 2,000 patients during the Great Famine of 1845 to 1852. This was also known as the Great Hunger, the Famine, and the Irish Potato Famine. This was a terrible period of starvation and disease in Ireland that constituted a historical social crisis and subsequently had a major impact on Irish society and history as a whole. The most severely affected areas were in the western and southern parts of Ireland, which included County Cork. Around 1 million people died during this period, and even more fled Ireland altogether. The country's population fell by about 25%, and in some particularly badly affected towns, populations fell by as much as 67%. Between 1845 and 1855, at least 2.1 million people left Ireland, primarily on packet ships, but also on steamboats. This is one of the greatest ever exoduses from a single island in history. The idea of people dying of starvation is unthinkable today, but during this period, hundreds of people were dying every single week. Right here, it's in Finbar's. The bodies were carried away via the passageways running beneath the building. If the stories are to be believed, St Finbar's has a ghost dating from the 1940s. She is a nun, and she walks the corridors silently, checking on patients as they rest in their beds. Vernon Mount. Vernon Mount, alternatively known as Vernon Mount House or Mount Vernon, stands as a dilapidated Georgian manor house located in Cork City. Constructed during the late 1780s through to the early 1790s, its architectural design is often attributed to Abraham Hargrave. Originally commissioned by Atwell Hayes, a prosperous brewer and miller, the residence took its name from Mount Vernon, the renowned abode of US President George Washington. Despite its completion, Atwell Hayes chose not to inhabit the dwelling following his wife's passing. Instead, he leased the property to his son, Henry Brown Hayes. Brown Hayes, reputedly, invested substantial sums in enhancing the house's interior, commissioning murals and artworks from the talented artist Nathaniel Grogan. Among Grogan's notable contributions were several pieces adorning doorways and internal architectural features, including a depiction of Minerva on a grand curved ceiling. The distinctive architectural elements such as the curved elevations, staircase, oval atrium, and interior embellishments rendered Vernon Mount, in the eyes of the Irish Georgian Society, a unique specimen in the annals of Irish villas and a structure of national significance. Over the years, Vernon Mount changed hands multiple times, yet remained largely unused, succumbing to neglect in the latter part of the 20th century onwards. Recognising its historical importance, the National Monuments Service included it in the records of monuments and places, while Cork County Council listed it on a record of protected structures, aiming to safeguard its heritage. In 2014, the Irish Times ran a story entitled, Why We Should Save Cork's Vernon Mount. The once grand house was falling apart. It had suffered from vandalism for decades. It had considerable roof damage and water issues throughout. At this point in time, there was some optimism for the future of Vernon Mount, as the areas surrounding the house were being developed as parkland, to link to a larger park with a footbridge across Cork's South Ring Road. There was real hope that Vernon Mount would be restored and begin a new lease of life as a hotel, conference centre or corporate headquarters. However, this would never come to pass, as in July 2016, the building was ravaged by a huge fire, which reduced Vernon Mount to nothing but an empty shell. In 2021, the building was subject to a funding request for stabilisation works due to risk of collapse. Today, the future of the house is uncertain, but what is certain is that the house has long been rumoured to be haunted by the ghost of Mary Pike. This was due to a dark chapter in the building's long and storied history. Mary Pike entered the world in 1776, the cherished daughter of Samuel Pike and Catherine, formerly Hutchinson. Samuel, in partner with his elder brother Ebenezer, managed a family bank situated in Cork City. We don't know much about Mary's early life, but what we do know is that at the age of around 20 in 1796, her father passed away, and she inherited the vast sum of £20,000, the equivalent today of around £1.8 million. She chose to leave the city and lived in with the family of Cooper Penrose, who was her aunt's brother. She didn't live with her own mother as they fell out over differing religious views. The fateful day of July the 22nd, 1797, marked a harrowing turn in Pike's life, and one she would never fully recover from. Sir Henry Brown Hayes orchestrated her abduction using a forged letter from her mother's physician, claiming her mother was gravely ill and requesting her presence. Despite their differences, Mary rushed to see her mother, but Hayes ambushed her and kidnapped her en route from Woodhill. She was taken to Vernon Mount, Hayes's home, where Hayes and his sister attempted to force Mary to marry him, so he could benefit from her fortune. She resisted strongly, but she was being held against her will and had no idea what would happen to her for refusing. Who knows what she endured within Vernon Mount, her prison. Thankfully, Mary's uncle Richard found out where she was and rescued her. Hayes fled, so Richard put up a reward, on top of the reward that the government had offered of £1,000, which is the equivalent today of £93,000, for the capture of Henry Brown Hayes. Hayes remained at large, but eventually wrote to Mary Pike, offering his surrender should the reward be rescinded. He was brought before the Cork Spring Assizes on the 13th of April 1801, almost 4 years after Mary had been kidnapped. He escaped the death penalty and was instead sentenced to transportation to Botany Bay in Australia. Despite this closure, Mary's ordeal was far from over, and she never got over what happened to her. Mary had developed a deep-seated fear of men. Some accounts claim she was placed into an asylum, but this is unsubstantiated. She died in 1832, leaving behind a substantial fortune totaling £55,000, which would be around £5 million today. Mary may have escaped Vernon Mount thanks to her uncle Richard, but in death it appears she returned to the location of her most traumatic experiences, as today her silent, sorry shade stalks the ruined building. You can follow How Haunted on Twitter at @HowHauntedPod, or over on Instagram at @HowHauntedPod, where you will see photos galore relating to our ghost trail of County Cork. If you want to get in touch, you can do so by visiting the website at www.how-haunted.com, or you can email me at rob@how-haunted.com. If you'd like to support the show, you could sign up to one of three Patreon tiers. They start at as little as £1. You can get early ad-free access to episodes and a monthly bonus episode where I conduct a paranormal investigation, talking you through the history, the ghost stories, and what happened on the night itself. This is interspersed with audio from the ghost hunt. What's more, there's a free 7-day trial to the £3 tier, so you could get access right now to March's special episode in which you join me overnight at the Lytton Fill in Newcastle upon Tyne. Then there are all of the other special episodes, which include the big Halloween special at the Golden Fleece in York, Dalhousie Castle Hotel, the York Dungeon, Bedlam Theatre, Kielder Castle, the Dean Court Hotel, and the 48 hours I spent in the company of a haunted doll. You could also get yourself some exclusive How Haunted merch, including a mug and a t-shirt. Find out more at patreon.com/howhauntedpod. If you'd like to support the show but you aren't a fan of Patreon, why not donate a couple of pounds to help with the admin side of the podcast? You can do this at buymeacoffee.com/howhauntedpod. All the information and links are in the podcast episode description. If you've enjoyed this episode, then please consider leaving a review on your podcast provider of choice. It does help other people to find How Haunted. Next time out, we conclude our time in Ireland, for now, as we visit 10 more haunted locations to complete our trilogy of episodes. We will investigate locations as varied as a hotel, a stone circle, a prison known as Ireland's Alcatraz, a 17th century fort, and even a petrol station. Join me next episode, and for the final time, we will ask, just how haunted is County Cork? Thank you so much for accompanying me for our paranormal adventures once again. Stay safe, and join me next time, when we will once again ask the question, how haunted?